My name is Andrea Maravich, and I'm from the Pennsylvania Child Welfare Resource Center. We wanted to explore some timely issues and topics affecting child welfare practice today, so we partnered with our colleagues at the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh of UPMC to bring you a series of podcasts. Throughout this series, we will have meaningful conversations with subject matter experts on topics ranging from opioid use and its effect on substance-exposed infants to the effects of trauma on a child. We invite you to tune in to each episode and encourage you to have meaningful conversations on these subjects and more with your colleagues as well. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, drug overdose and opioid-involved deaths are on the rise. This epidemic is wide-reaching, affecting both men and women, all races, and adults of nearly all ages. Per the CDC, overdose deaths from opioids, including prescription opioids and heroin, have more than quadrupled since 1999. On average, 91 Americans die every day from an opioid overdose. Given these startling statistics, we wanted to have a meaningful conversation about the effects of this epidemic on one of our most vulnerable populations, infants and children. I'm talking with Dr. Adelaide Eichmann, Assistant Professor of Pediatrics of the Division of Child Advocacy of the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh of UPMC. Our topic today is neonatal drug exposure. When drug use occurs during pregnancy, what can happen to the baby as a result?
Great question. Just up front, I wanted to say that I'll probably use the terms neonatal drug exposure and prenatal drug use. I might use those interchangeably. And basically, both of them mean that the mother used some sort of substance during her pregnancy. We know through years of studies that most drugs pass through the placenta and into the fetus. The effect that a particular substance can have on the developing fetus really depends on what the substance is, when in pregnancy the drug is used, and how frequently it's used. So we know that certain drugs, for instance, alcohol, can have major effects on the child's physical growth if used within a certain window during pregnancy. So for instance, an infant that whose mother drank alcohol during pregnancy, the child could have a small head or could have a particular look of their face due to that alcohol. That's why it's recommended that pregnant women not drink any alcohol during pregnancy, because we don't know when the safe times are. So some drugs used later in pregnancy might not have an effect on the child's physical look or development of their organs, for instance, but it could have an effect on the baby's ability to think or reason or their IQ later on. And sometimes those things are not obvious at birth, but become obvious later on during the child's development. So we know that the use of common drugs, for instance, cigarettes, can not only affect a baby's growth, but they can have lifelong effects on the child's behavior, their language development, and their achievement. Other drugs, such as marijuana, while it might not affect how big the baby is when they're born, it can have an effect on the behavior of the newborn and the ability of that child's ability to think through problems in the long term. So as you already know, I'm sure, our country is in the midst of an opioid epidemic. And so there are now many more pregnant women using opioids and thus exposing fetuses to opiates than any other time in the past. It's very well known that infants that are exposed to opioids while they are in the womb are at risk to go through a withdrawal syndrome. That withdrawal syndrome is called neonatal abstinence syndrome, and it's often referred to as NAS by people in the medical profession. I will discuss this a little later, but prenatal opiate exposure can cause NAS, but it can also have a lifelong effect on a child's behavior.
Are there any types of drug screenings that occur upon the birth of the child?
Sure. So to take a step back, I think it's important when we're discussing screening for drug and alcohol use that we distinguish between universal screening, or checking every pregnant woman, versus targeted screening, in which women are screened for drug use when they are deemed to be high risk for these behaviors. It's also important to note that screening can be in the form of questions. So, for instance, an obstetrician could ask a woman Do you use drugs or alcohol? If so, how often? When was the last time? That sort of thing. This sort of screening relies on self-report. And really, you know, we need an honest answer from a woman in order to really help care for the woman and the infant as best we can. It goes without saying that this technique is best conducted in a calm and non-judgmental way. There are other types of screening that rely on biological samples. So people are pretty familiar with this concept of sending urine, for instance, to check for drugs, or blood. Sometimes an infant's first, and we'll get into this, but sometimes an infant's first bowel movement, which is also called meconium, can be sent for drug testing. So there are pros and cons, really, of each of these types of screenings, and different hospitals have different protocols surrounding drug testing.
Under what circumstances does a newborn undergo a drug screen?
So I touched on this a little bit before, but I did want to say that universal screening is essentially unheard of. And really, this has to do with practicality and cost. So in order to determine which women should be screened, most hospitals at this point have a very clear protocol. Some variables, just as examples, that could make a woman high risk would be a lack of prenatal care. So a mother that did not go get checkups while she was pregnant. Or if the woman discloses, when asked by her obstetrician, she discloses drug use. Anyway, if it's deemed to be a pregnancy in which there was a high likelihood of drug use, an infant would then be tested as well as the mother.
Are there any circumstances in which the mother's drug screen might come out as positive, but her newborn baby screen would not?
Absolutely. So we know that the mother and the baby are separate people. So they cohabitate for some time, but they are different people with different metabolisms. It's very possible that a mother used a drug during her pregnancy and not very much went through her placenta. Or that some did go through the placenta and the child did get some of the drug into their system, but that infant had a higher metabolism or a faster metabolism than the mother. It's also possible that the testing sent on the mother was just a better quality specimen than that sent on the infant. So I had mentioned some of this before, the urine drug screening. Sometimes there is not enough urine actually sent to the lab to test. And then I had mentioned the meconium, which is the baby's first bowel movement. If for some reason that sample is obtained too late, then the drugs might have already passed through the system and our test will miss it.
I know you already touched upon some of this, but are there any drugs that might not come out in a screen?
Yes, definitely. So we know that our drug screens are not perfect. Often urine will be checked for drugs of abuse, and by this I mean common drugs that are used such as marijuana or cocaine or opiates, but these tests aren't perfect for the reasons I said before. But we also know that these tests do not check for every single drug that's out there. There are certainly newer drugs, such as K2, for instance, which is a synthetic marijuana, that will not come back on one of these standard drug screens. It's hard to keep up with the newer drugs. There are also drugs that we have to test for separately. So for instance, as an aside, if a toddler came into our hospital at Children's and they weren't acting right, there might be many tests sent, and among those, it could be a drug screen to see, did this child somehow get something into their system? Is the behavior the result of an ingestion of a drug? So a urine drug screen, as I said before, will check for drugs of abuse, but if there were buprenorphine in the home, which is also known as Suboxone, a physician will have to think of that drug and order a special test and run a certain test in order to check for that.
Let's talk next about neonatal abstinence, which can happen to a newborn when he or she is exposed to opiates while in the mother's womb. Tell us a little more about that. What are the symptoms and what symptoms would a newborn exhibit?
Definitely. So I had said before that when a fetus is exposed to opiates in the womb, this is also called prenatal drug exposure, the infant can go through withdrawal after birth. And as I said before, this is called neonatal abstinence syndrome, and people will often shorten that to NAS. So much like an adult who uses certain drugs could go through withdrawal if for some reason they can't get that drug, an infant that has now been born and is no longer getting the medicine or the drug from the mother's system, that infant can also go through withdrawal. So opiate withdrawal is a pretty uncomfortable experience for adults, and it's definitely uncomfortable for infants, with the added problem that it can actually be dangerous to the infant. Opiate withdrawal will affect many parts of the infant's body, and little babies can have the same symptoms that an adult would have. For instance, they could have runny nose, they could have sneezing, diarrhea. But in addition to those uncomfortable symptoms, the infant could have life-threatening complications such as seizures. This seems like common sense, but clearly if a baby's uncomfortable, they're not going to feel well when they're going through this withdrawal. The babies can be jittery, they can be very tight. Some people call that being hypertonic, and they're very easily startled. So any noise that another baby that was not exposed to might not startle to, if there's even a quiet noise around a baby going through NAS, they could get very startled and very upset. Some babies that are going through NAS or are having these symptoms will suck a lot, but they're not very good at taking in formula or breast milk. So as you can imagine, an infant could have difficulty eating efficiently. And then as I stated before, some babies will have diarrhea. So the combination of not eating well and having diarrhea puts the child at risk for poor growth or failure to thrive or dehydration.
How do you treat neonatal abstinence?
That's a really good question. So most hospitals will have a protocol where a child will be watched in the hospital for several days before going home. So if it is known that there has been neonatal drug exposure, we know that the symptoms of withdrawal are miserable, but they can also be very dangerous for a baby. So we don't want to miss any baby that might go through withdrawal. And it's important to understand that most babies will not go through withdrawal right away. It might take several days for their body to start missing that drug. Because we know that withdrawal can be so uncomfortable and dangerous actually for babies, they'll be watched in the birthing hospital for several days after birth. And typically there's actually a formal way to watch these babies, and you might hear the term Finnegan scores, which is a way to score how bad the child's withdrawal is. While a baby is being watched, we know that there are environmental ways and non-medical ways to soothe a child that's going through withdrawal. So as I said before, a baby does not feel well when they're going through withdrawal. And they're clearly too small to soothe themselves. So it's very important to have a baby in a calm environment so that they don't get overstimulated or overwhelmed. Most hospitals will have a nursery that's dark and quiet, so that the child is not bothered. Every infant likes being held, and you can never spoil a baby by holding them. But if a child is going through NAS, they really like being held, and they really like having a pacifier or something to suck on. So I'll go over this in a little bit, but if a mother is in a stable program, such as a methadone or Subutex treatment program, and she's compliant with the medical direction, then she'll be encouraged to breastfeed the infant. Obviously, there are many benefits to breast milk and to breastfeeding, and as long as the mother's not using other drugs, then the little bit of methadone or Subutex that's in her breast milk can act to soothe the infant. In addition, breastfeeding is helpful to help the mom and the baby bond and can really help the baby with the human contact and holding that infant that really helps soothe them. So of course there are times when these environmental interventions are not enough, and a child's Finnegan scores would be going up. Knowing that a baby could have a seizure if they go through withdrawal, then it's sometimes important to start medicines to prevent that withdrawal. There are different protocols at different hospitals for which medication is used. Some hospitals use morphine, which has the benefit of wearing off relatively quickly, and the dose can be adjusted fairly quickly. So if it seems like a baby's doing better, their dose can be lowered gradually until it's safe to stop that medicine. Other places do use methadone. This is a medication you're likely familiar with, but this is often used in adult opioid recovery programs. Good thing about this medicine is that the level will stay at a steady state in the child's bloodstream. However, because it is long-lasting, if the baby seems to be doing better and we want to go down on the dose, for instance, it will take longer to do that because we have to wait for it to wear off as well. Other medications that can be used, often in conjunction with morphine or methadone, are phenobarbital and clonidine. All of these medicines are used with the oversight of a neonatologist, typically, or a very experienced pediatrician. And it's really their call, depending on how well the baby's doing, which medications are being used.
Are there any long-term implications for the child?
Absolutely. So I know I've stated this multiple times, but a child that has had prenatal opioid exposure, sometimes they will go through the formal, full-blown NAS, which is withdrawal, and other babies might have milder symptoms of withdrawal. But even if a baby's been treated for NAS or did not hit the threshold to be treated, they're often fussier babies than your typical infant that has not been exposed. And I will say that taking care of any infant is difficult, but when there's a child that's fussier than usual, that can be very, very stressful. And sometimes I just like to have it on caseworkers' radar that these are often stressful situations before the baby was even born. So you can imagine that putting a fussy infant in there could put the baby at risk for maltreatment, or even if it doesn't get that far, for poor bonding with their parents. And it's really hard to tease out whether it's environmental or it's because of the prenatal opioid exposure. But often these kids will have behavior problems as they get older. And again, it could be from a lot of reasons, but it's important for the caseworker to know the potential risks just at the very beginning.
When an individual is physically dependent on opioids, he or she may be prescribed medications like Subutex or methadone to help lessen withdrawal symptoms and cravings as a part of that individual's drug addiction detoxification and maintenance program. For mothers of a newborn baby, I can see this raising some questions. You previously mentioned nursing as one of the ways to help an infant with NAS. You may have already answered this question, but can methadone or Subutex or other related drugs, for that matter, pass into breast milk, and is that something to be concerned about?
That's a great question. So in particular circumstances, as I was saying before, if a mother is in a very stable situation, if she is in a recovery program and is compliant with the directions of her physician, then she will be encouraged to breastfeed. And I did say a little bit before, but sometimes her maintenance medicine will go from her breast milk to the baby, but it's a very, very small amount. And I will say that it will have it seems counterintuitive, but it actually has the benefit of helping that baby's withdrawal if they're having more mild symptoms. That being said, this is a very, very tiny amount. And for instance, it would not cause the baby to stop breathing. So if something like that happened, if the baby stopped breathing, then I would think that they had gotten medication in a different way. It was given to them because not enough would go through breast milk for the baby to become symptomatic.
Thank you so much for your time and information, Dr. Eichmann. I've learned a lot during our conversation, and I hope our listeners have too. I do have one last question for you, though. Are there any resources you might recommend for child welfare professionals or anyone who might be working with a family affected by an addiction?
Definitely. So I have several resources that I would recommend. First of all, we know that this is an epidemic, and there are people affected by opioid abuse and addiction from all walks of life. And it's very difficult on the family. So of course, if a person is interested in getting clean and getting support, there is Narcotics Anonymous. And for family members, as I said, this is a very difficult thing to watch somebody go through. There is something called NARAnon, which is a family support group. For a caseworker that is dealing with a family that has an active addiction issue, I would recommend looking at the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. They have a really excellent website that covers many aspects of the opioid epidemic. There's information on opioid basics, what different medicines are called, statistics on overdoses in different states, as well as promising programs in different states. I would like to really underscore, caseworkers are often the first line. They are the people that are able to go into the home. So even if a parent is in a stable recovery program, I'd really recommend thinking about child safety. So if a parent is able to bring methadone or Suboxone home, that's wonderful and very convenient, but now we're introducing a potentially very dangerous medicine into the home. So I always encourage families to get a locked box, and that's something that can be on the caseworker's radar. Lastly, I will say in Pennsylvania, we do have a program in which anybody can get naloxone, which is also called Narcan. Pennsylvania's Physician General has written a standing order for the general public to be able to get this Narcan without a prescription at a pharmacy. So essentially, if you are a caseworker or if you're somebody with a family member that has an opioid addiction, you can go get Narcan and have it in your home in the worst case scenario that somebody overdoses. Narcan is a life-saving medicine. There's no drawback to using it, but I will say that if it's administered, 911 should also be called simultaneously.
Thanks for those resources, and I want to thank you again for your willingness to share your expertise with us. Thanks for joining us. This concludes our first podcast with our colleagues at the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh of UPMC. Stay tuned for more episodes in the near future. To learn more about the Pennsylvania Child Welfare Resource Center and to check out our other podcasts, visit us at pacwrc.pitt.edu. Thank you.